Shall we start? Shall we start? Let's recite together to toward the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of God. Amen, amen. Bismillah. And I just want to make a immediate yashakur to Taki for came here and set up the sound system so the instruments would have music and, I mean, have sound, and I don't have to yell. I can just talk into the microphone. You can hear through the sound. So, what I want to do, especially this, I hope we can do it in the next hour. Usually I give myself a little more time. I want to unfold something we're intuitively aware of, but to make it conscious, what's the purpose of life? What are we doing here? What's going on? And to see that the extraordinary universality of it. And it's paradoxical because the purpose of life is completely universal. And then because there's no repetition in this universe, it has to be completely unique. In other words, the way it unfolds. But the map, I think we can find, we have to look for the map. So, along with sound effects and all. If we, and I want to do this in a way where we make an inquiry into ourselves, into what we feel, and so I think the first place to look is what motivates us, what's our driving force, I'm asking the question is it loud enough for you? I'm asking the question in a root motivation. And so why did you get up this morning? Why did you brush your teeth? Why did you drive here? Why did you feel happy? Why did you feel sad? Why did you punch the other person in the face? Or whatever. Or, you know, why were you mean-spirited? Why were you insulting? Why did you use pride? Why did you use greed, lust, anger, jealousy? And see if you can find a common root. You know, just look into your heart. Why did you get up? Okay, and let's have a dialogue. Yeah, go ahead. To connect this with the stream. So I like that answer. So when I have an answer like that, then I would ask myself the question, why do I want to connect with the stream? You know, what's the, in other words, the root behind. Yeah, keep going behind. So what, okay, why again, so yeah, keep going. So you follow the inquiry. Why would you want to be alone? Why would you want to be a part of everything? Okay, so the best placeholder word I know would be to be happy, because it's open-ended. Fulfilled, if you're fulfilled, then you would be happy. So it's... Don't get hung up on the word, because happy could also have its opposite, sad. So we're not looking for a word which has an opposite. So everybody with us so far? So Well, so if it's not sort of, let's dialogue about it so we can clear up our understanding, because each of us uses words in a different way. And so in that way, it's not the words that we're interested in, it's what's behind the words. So what comes up for you? I'm sure we all feel that way. So I'm not sure what we've said so far that would be contrary to that. Right. So we want to find our purpose. That's why we're having our dialogue. That's what we're looking for, to clarify our purpose. And we're trying to see if, since we have some motivation driving us, that it's just there all the time. It's like, you know, like when you don't have enough water, you get thirsty. From the feeling side, no matter what we've done to satisfy our thirst, we become thirsty again. So it's, we're investigating what that thirst is for, because since we all have that thirst, the purpose of life must be connected with it. It must be the roadmap to the goal. Did you follow what I'm saying? Yes, Rahmana. Right, so don't worry about, so we all agree. So again, I'm asking you not to get hung up on the word happy, because we don't mean temporary states. But I can't, so if I just look carefully into myself, I know I woke up this morning still feeling there's something to accomplish. There's something calling me. I'm thirsty for something. When I brushed my teeth, I brushed my teeth because I want to have nice teeth so that I can eat food and they don't hurt. But all of that is for that thirst. When I look deeply, I want to brush my teeth because I'm thirsty for, use the word fulfillment. Here we could put the word realization. We could say, like Sufi teaching number one, to overcome beliefs and disbeliefs by self-realization. So we could put the word self-realization in there. According to the title of our retreat, my current word that I'm enjoying using in this place is limitless freedom. Limitless freedom for the benefit of all sentient beings. Limitless and free. But happy, there's something good about happy too. So, freedom, none of the words are gonna be working, because we're just using these words to help us find a more and more refined understanding of what's calling, what we're thirsty for. And we should realize that up till today, every day we've tried to satisfy that thirst. Last night I had some 75% dark chocolate that Bonita had bought for me. It worked for a short time only. Damn, I wish it was just like, But it didn't, I can't say it failed me, because I enjoyed it. Huh? But it only had a short-term gain, and it wasn't a long-term gain. I want you to also realize that every unskillful means that we and everyone uses is also for this. For instance, in a simple way, if I feel uncomfortable, I might use pride. Pride would mean my happiness would be based on your suffering. I'm better than you are. it's an unskillful means, right? It's not going to work. But I still want you to realize or consider that it's an effort to still satisfy the same thirst for limitless freedom. You with me? Anybody object? So that means ISIS, when they cut somebody's head off, it's for limitless freedom. It's an unskillful means. I mean, clearly, it's not going to work. Not at all. It'll have some temporary, you know, in their case, from their delusional point of view. And not to just think outside of ourselves, we ourselves have quite a few delusional points of view that we continually massage for limitless freedom without success. So if you see things the way I've said so far, that means that every action ever taken by everything and everyone everywhere was for this thirst. Nothing excluded. You with me? Good, good. Let's because we all have the same question. Yes, I believe so. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I understand. So Sabora said, even the unconscious actions. Okay. So hidden in the question is a conceptual view of that a view is conscious or unconscious, and we're clear that it's not a black and white world, but it's graduated. So in fact, every wish that we've had so far, since we're not free, has been a combination of conscious and unconscious. In other words, we have excellent conscious motivations and other unconscious motivations. So I'm up here as a teacher, let's say. I love to serve. I'm deeply inspired to, but there's got to be some unconscious ones in there, don't you think? Likes to be liked, likes to be seen, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So those are, you know, those unconscious motivations that I have, most of them I'm aware of, and so they're my companions. Like, oh, how are you? The need to be seen. Thanks for coming along for the ride. Have a seat. We're going to meditate, you know. Yeah, or whatever, you know. Come and join the party, but don't make a lot of noise. Yeah, so in that way, every motivation is some combination of wise and foolish, or, you know, skillful or unskillful, whatever words you want. Known and unknown, yeah. What else? So, what I've said now is that every action ever taken, ever by everything and everyone in every realm, not just the human realm, in every realm, everything which has life, was for this. And so, by coming to that intuitive realization, now we have to look as carefully as we can, what is this roadmap thirst calling us? Because the purpose of life has to be associated with this, because it's universal. There's not a person sitting here that's not true for, and there's not a dog that's not true for, or a cat, or a snake, or a tree, or a rock, or the other realms we don't really know the kinds of forms of existence. Every realm, everywhere, every action ever taken, ever. That's what I'm proposing. You like it? You accept? Come on, argue, you know, find somewhere it doesn't work. What's that? I said rocks. You don't? How did they go from rock to gem? Humans created gems. Well, yeah, I mean, the diamond, emeralds, life's a little slower for a rock. I'm with you there. Anybody here ever self-sabotage?
And then commit a crime knowing they're going to get arrested and put in jail. That's the opposite of freedom.
Yeah. Well, and why did they do it? So I'm saying that it's an unskillful means to fulfill the same thirst. Let me say it in another way so you can see it in a simpler way. Our actions, skillful and unskillful, can be understood as arising out of a stream of causes and conditions. Right? So it's clear if someone in this lifetime has had a wholesome combination of affection, balance, regularity, nourishment, that they have a good opportunity for skillful means. It's likely that if your parents separated at a certain age developmentally, you may project incorrectly that they separated because you have no worth for them to stay together and you don't deserve affection. So then later on in your life, when you yearn for affection and if you get it, then your self-image is a person who doesn't deserve affection. And so you push the affection away because you have an attachment to your self-image as someone not worthy. So all unskillful means. That doesn't mean you don't want affection. Just means you've learned bad habits. You could say it that way. And that goes for the murderer, the rapist, let's go back to your example. Sabotage. Right. You know, because they don't, I can think of Marie's that you know. Yeah, one second. Yeah, our psychiatrist will fill us in. But I have a Marie who, wonderful person, and she was a self-sabotager. So many good things would happen to her, but because of her causes and conditions, great heart, but every time something good would happen, she would sabotage it. And we worked with it, and she transformed it. And now it's like, ooh. You know, the self-sabotager, like I said, your wounds, they'll accompany you, but if you transform them, they just don't have that power over you. So you can say, oh, I self-sabotager. Good to see you again. Sit down. We're going to meditate. You know. So go ahead. Yes.
I was just going to say, for the person who self-sabotages or expresses their anger through hate to somebody else, sometimes it's their need to express anger that was never allowed or released before. So that expression of anger is still a move towards freedom without realizing that the consequence would be jail or whatever. And like in teenagers who cut themselves to release, anger, they say, I don't feel anything, so I'm going to cut myself so I feel something. You know, you think, what freedom is in that? But it's like, I can do what I want.
Office hours or
okay, good. So I'm glad you asked the question. So does that make sense for you now? Yeah. So, but we have to realize that you gave an example of an extreme. I don't know if any of you have done jail time, so maybe there is someone in the room that has, but for most of us, we didn't make that particular foolish mistake. But I can assure you that each of us here has made more gentle foolish mistakes based on our causes and conditions and or our confusion. As the Tibetans say, there are only three issues: grasping, aversion, aversion, or ignorance. It's just another way to say causes and conditions. Grasping, aversion, and ignorance. What else? I mean, I want to take time for this because we should thoroughly vet this idea. I don't want you to just think, oh, well, Shabda said so. And forget about Shabda and what I said. Think, I want you to feel in yourself, connect with the thirst. Yes, dear. Fine. We're not hung up at all on terms. We're just trying to communicate. The idea that I can say a couple of words and you can understand something from it, that's a miracle. So let's not get hung up on, or if you like to, maybe we can refine our terms. So what did you, life serving and not life serving? I like those. Okay, what's missing? What else is it? What other purpose is there? Okay, why would we want to connect? Okay, why would we want to have pleasure? I mean, these are all names for limitless freedom as far as I'm concerned. Connection is another name for limitless freedom. Pleasure is another, or joy is another name for limitless freedom. So don't get hung up on the word limitless freedom. Look for what's behind the word. That's what's important. It's, the words limitless freedom is just two words. There's something extraordinary, and we also have to recognize it's shooting, and like I said last night, shooting an arrow at a target you can't see. So we're trying to name something that we feel intuitively. I'm certain we all have an intuitive sense of something, but how could we put our hands on it? Because if we experienced it, we're there. Until we have the full experience, it's only conceptual. And conceptual is quite boring. I don't really care about my philosophy. What did Rumi say? He said, now that I've tasted the wine, either give me the whole bottle or nothing at all. Yeah, somebody had something in the back, so... No? Okay. Go ahead, Rahmana. Okay. I believe it is 100%, but I also recognize that we're looking at something, the purpose of life in global is too small a word, universal, but you mean the same thing, I know. Global means our globe, and knowing that it's a speck of sand in our Milky Way, which is a speck of sand in the known universe. Why did you close it? Is it too cold for you? Oh, it's raining in, I see. Okay. Maybe leave it open a teeny bit so the air keeps flowing. Thanks. Okay. Go ahead, Sean. Could you hear what he's saying? Okay. All right. Here would be my response. Love, serve, and remember, that's a pedagogy. That's a method. So I think we all agree, this is a terrific method. It is the method, to love, to serve, and to remember. Again, we have to look at what those words mean. Remember is a tricky word. I don't like the word remember, but I like what we think it means. Yeah. So that's a method to love, serve, and remember. And we're talking about by loving, serving, and remembering, we're going to awaken to our true nature. We will overcome beliefs and disbeliefs by self-realization, or as it says in Quran, know thyself and thou shalt know God. And so what I'm trying to have us feel is to see that this yearning thirst has been with us, is with us, will be with us everywhere, all the time, in every realm. And so as we open ourselves to understanding that thirst, we will have a clearer and clearer view of a direction, of a qibla, of a way, of the way toward, again, we're putting the word limitless freedom in there. I can give you some examples why I like the word limitless freedom, but I don't want you to get hung up on the words. We're wanting, it's some extraordinary, you know. Look at it this way. Right now, our happiness, our profound joy, our peace, our contentment, whatever words you want to put in there, is often based on outer circumstances, right? Our condition is based on circumstance. You with me? Real freedom is the being whose condition is no longer based on circumstance. If we, and we haven't done this yet, but if we look into our, you know, the stereoscopic screen of our being, we may find that our essential self, if you'd like to call it that, often the word soul is used. Again, I'm going to go to the quote I gave you on the flyer. Hazrat Inayat Khan writes, and I can read you some of the lovely things he says, the soul is an undivided portion, an undivided portion of the whole reality. Maybe let's do that. Let's listen to Inayat a few times. And so it can give you, it may give you some help and some insight. Sure it does for me. In this subject, the first thing that we must understand is that the soul is an undivided portion of the all-pervading consciousness. It is undivided because it is the absolute being. It is completely filled with the whole existence. The portion of it that is reflected by a certain name and form becomes comparatively more conscious of the object reflected in it than of the other objects. In other words, God becomes confused. You're looking at God confused. Are you with me? Everybody with me? I hope this is meaningful for you. It is for me. Our mind, our body, being reflected upon a portion of the all-pervading consciousness, make that part of the consciousness experience itself as an individual soul, which in reality is the universal spirit. This notion of an individual soul experiences the external world through the medium of the bodies reflecting in it, namely our mind and our body. You like it? Okay. Here's another couple. So, you know, here's a section he's written called The Soul Itself Alone. It's all saying the same thing again and again. The soul in itself alone is no other than consciousness, which is all-pervading. But when the same consciousness is caught in a limitation through being surrounded by elements in that state of captivity, it is called soul. With me? Or with him? Sure. But when the same consciousness is caught in a limitation through being surrounded by elements in that state of captivity, it is called soul. Such is the nature of soul, youth, age, beauty, ugliness, sin, or virtue, all these before the are before the soul when they are exposed to it during the physical and mental existence. And the soul, intoxicated in the reflection, may be for that time attracted and bound by the object reflected. But as soon as the soul turns in, it's free. It experiences its freedom. It's always free. When it, he says, as soon as the soul turns away from the confusion, and it's not turning. You know, these are all words. You're not turning away at all. You let go of the attachment. You turn away. You look. I'm wearing this shirt. Yesterday I was wearing a shirt. Roberta pointed out to me, well, no, I like my shirt yesterday. I don't know. Did you like it? Similar to this. It had a tear. It was torn over here. If I associated my being with it, it'd be sad. I would cry. I've got a tear. Luckily, it's a shirt. Calm down. My best shirt. Calm down. My best cheeks. My skin doesn't look so good anymore. What happened? or you know, at the moment of death, like, oh, this is different. Right? It's a shirt. It's a shirt. Mind. It's a, you know, again, the breath, the soul invigorates the mind and the body, but neither body nor mind is soul. The soul is free. It's free by nature. By its nature is freedom. And while it's in captivity, it will constantly search for freedom. This is another way to describe this feeling of thirst. The soul by nature is free. It's free. It's unbounded. Now, if we describe what that freedom feels like, you know, we did a little last night, you know, what did Joe Miller used to say? Unendurable pleasure indefinitely prolonged. Unendurable pleasure indefinitely prolonged. You know, it's, you know, we're nodding our head because we have an intuitive feeling of it. You know, we feel it when we feel love. You know, we feel loved or fulfilled when we're able to be kind and generous and beneficent. When we see extraordinary acts, extraordinary forms of beauty in nature, power and courage and strength, and you know. So we all feel it, and we yearn for it. Oh, I felt so relaxed before. I want to be relaxed again. And, you know, in my limited view, another name for Buddha nature. I'm just, you know, switching names now, so you can see that this is the same principle in every tradition. Christ consciousness, Buddha nature. Perfect relaxation and effortlessness. Perfect. So if somebody asks you, what's the core of your religious tradition or spiritual tradition, you could say, being relaxed. Yeah, so many of you know I did start a world religion called Relaxitarians. But it's not getting that far because it's been misunderstood. Because people think it means lawn chairism, you know. Lawn chairism. Well, maybe it does, yeah. It does. So I like the Sufi sofa, yeah. So sometimes I like easeitarian. And I think it also goes with effortlessness. There's something where action is taken without an I, without the thought of an I. That's what I mean by effortless, without the sense of a doer. You follow me? So since we've been working on strength, let's just throw in some of the Wazifa work right in here, just kind of slip it right in. I like to recite names of strength every day because my point of view is that without strength, nothing will be accomplished. You just won't accomplish anything without strength. So it seems to me the first thing you need is strength and courage before you can be kind and compassionate and so on. So we did Ya Qadir, Ya Muqtadir, we did Ya Mateen. Some of the other names that are in the text that we selected, Ya Dhal Jalali Wal Ikram, Ya Qahir. But here's the pair that I like saying. And it appears this way in the Quran. And I learned it when I was with the Qadiri Sufis in Morocco. They use it all the time. And Ya Qawi. So Qawee. Ya Qawi. Ya Qawi. And it goes with Ya Aziz. Ya Aziz. Ya Aziz. Okay, so when we went into the roots of Ya Qawi, the natural strength that arises before the formation of a doer, right? And so in that way, it's a strength which helps unseat the commanding self. So it's very freeing. So you can be strong without I'm strong. I in the sense of smallness. You with me? Yeah. So it's lovely. It's like, all right. You know, other times we've chanted, Ya Azali, Ya Abadi. Ya Azali, Ya Abadi. These are two of the extra names. They're not part of the 99. Ya Badi is in the 99. But this combination, Ya Azali, very difficult to actually describe, but it says... It says, before there was time, or outside of the realm, you know, outside of the realm of time, and abadi, without space, you know, before space, outside of space. Again, you know, language would be difficult, but what you see when you connect with Ya Azali, Ya Abadi, is that in order to consolidate the thought of a self, you need time and space. You with me? Yeah. Yeah. So behind time and space, you know, where it says, Kul hu Allahu ahad Allah, you know, say I am one with no beginning, with no end, never took birth, never dying. You know, the what is it, Surah 112, I think, whatever it is. So talking about that limitless freedom, the all-pervading reality. You can't say before time and space. It doesn't make sense, but outside, you can't say outside because everything is included in it. So it's very mysterious because if we want to speak about it carefully, we have to recognize that the absolute and the relative are inseparable. They're not two things. There's not the absolute and the relative. It can't be. They're inseparable. I'm sorry if I'm getting too philosophical. Yeah. Okay. So Yakawi is calling on a strength to unseat I, you know, the commanding self, the false notion of a small I. So, woohoo, you know, that I like that. And it's combined with Aziz, which also means strength. But when you look into the roots, Aziz indicates a strength which comes from connecting with your true value, your preciousness. You know, one of the images of Ya'aziz is the baby, the eye of the baby eagle, something very precious. So Aziz is the strength which manifests when you connect with your true nature, you know, with your how precious your being is. And Ya'kawi is the strength which helps unseat the thought of I. When you chant them together, you put the word you in between. Ya kawi yu ya aziz. Ya kawi yu ya aziz. Okay? Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. So, you know, just to make a little note in here, in our pedagogy of our family, you know, and how we like love, serve, and remember, mysticism of breath, number one, in my order of things, mysticism of breath, number one, mysticism of sound. And now I don't know how to number things, but extraordinary value, and mysticism of attitude, you know, how to live life. Those are the three pillars, I believe, of our work. Sound, breath, and attitude, view, you know. So it's quite extraordinary that for us as human beings, we can recite sounds with devotion and they can transform. It's a good deal. It's really quite a good deal. I mean, imagine you could do something as simple as not being intelligent and just recite, you know, and it'll work out. It helps. It's a good helper.
Kind of brings to mind like the water, you know, like Emoto's work with the crystals and saying the kind words and you get a different crystal and you say something in disharmony. That where you can
where you see the result.
Science, like scientists, people like that.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And one thing is it changes the outer world, but far more than that, it changes the glasses you're wearing. So because the great mystic sees God everywhere, even in the bad-looking snowflake, the bad-looking snowflake is still the altar of God in the biggest picture. But yes, kind actions, beautiful words will create a beautiful world. Okay, Ya Kawiyu, Ya Aziz. Everyone clear on the intent? So we're calling on strength to help us manifest as benefit, to help all sentient beings awaken to their true nature, which is limitless freedom. Ya Kawiyu. Ya Aziz, Ya Kawiyu, 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 Ya Kawiyu, Ya Aziz, 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 Ya Aziz, Ya Kawiyu, Ya Kawiyu, Ya Aziz, 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 Ya Kawiyu, Ya Aziz. We like to do the fikr of a wazifa practice. That means finding a way to put those names or sounds on our breath. And in this case, there's two names, so we have to choose which one to put on the in-breath and the out-breath. It's a subjective choice. Both will work. My choice would be to breathe out Ya Kawiyu, letting go of the idea, the notion of separateness of a self, and to breathe in Ya Aziz, to connect with our true value. So breathe out Ya Kawi, breathe in Ya Aziz. Every experience on the physical or astral psychic plane is just a dream before the soul. It is ignorance when we take this experience to be real. We do so because we cannot see ourself, as the eye sees all things, but not itself. Therefore, the soul identifies, in a confused way, the soul identifies itself with all the things it sees, and it experiences a change in its own identity with the changed of the with the change of its constantly changing vision. But in reality, the soul has no birth, no death, no beginning, no end. Sin cannot touch it. Nor can virtue exalt it. Wisdom can't open it up, nor can ignorance darken it. It has been and always will be. It is the very essence of being human, and all else is a cover, like a globe on a light. The soul's unfoldment actually comes from its own power, which in the end is breaking through all the ties of the lower planes. We are free by nature, and we look for freedom during our captivity. All the holy beings of this world have become so by freeing the soul. Our freedom being the only object there is in life. You like it? Yeah, you connecting with it? Yeah. Even though we've talked about it as clearly as we can, and even though it's the extraordinarily keen sense, we have to keep asking ourselves or connecting with the thirst and the feeling so that we keep refining our idea of what freedom is or happiness, whatever placeholder you want there. And now you have to see that this is the universal purpose of every living thing in every realm, everywhere, ever. Now, if we understand our own current condition, there's a word in philosophy called reify. We have reified a self, an idea of an I. So I want to give you a few examples. Everybody hold up your pointer finger. Okay, so yes, so we all have pointer fingers. Are there any two pointer fingers in this room that are alike? No. But even more profound is, have a look at your pointer. Whoops, mine's changing. It's different. Well, oh, wow, it keeps changing. Wonderful, thank you. And now we could really be tree-free. Have some good lunch. So not only is everything unique, but in fact, oh, another example. What's the closest river?
Lynx Creek.
We'll go with Lynx. Okay, we're going to make a field trip today to the Lynx Creek. Here we are. We're looking at it. Look, it's Lynx Creek. We'll go, yeah, Lynx Creek. Okay, now I'm going to ask you, which part of it is Lynx Creek? Where does the all end? If you're going to say all of it. How could it end there? Can't end in everywhere. Right, I know, you know. It's interdependent, yeah. But more than that, even more than the principle of interdependence, is the principle of insubstantial. Substantial means fixed, noun. Because we look at it, we see the waters moving. And in fact, the Lynx Creek has never been the same. In fact, it's never sat still to become the Lynx Creek, even for a moment. There's never been a moment of the Lynx Creek. And actually, it's not just the water flowing. It needs the bank. It needs the gravity, so that it means it needs this earth spinning around the sun. It needs the sky. It needs so many things for its identity. So it's interdependent and it's insubstantial because it's never stood still. So it's, this is my own joke. I'm sure other people have used it. It's Lynx creaking. It's a verb, right? It's not a noun. There is no noun. You know, I understand that nouns are a convenience of language to help us communicate. But I also recognize wholeheartedly there is no such thing as a noun. I just want you to take, you may have studied this before, but there is no such thing as a noun. It doesn't exist. You agree? Find me a noun. Couldn't be a noun. It's got to be a verb. Didn't you see that? Isn't there some book, God is a Verb? Yes, it's very mysterious, and it's an excellent question. So, you know,
We'll leave it as a question. Right now, we don't have to worry too much about it. But it's a good question. You know, what does it mean to be without birth, without death, all pervading? You know, is there any place? But there's no place where the absolute stands still. Or, you know, anyway, it's a later question. Let's try to just work on, you know, right now we want to work on kindness and courage and so on. Yeah. But I appreciate the question. Certainly, when I refer to Shabda, you can see now that is insubstantial. I'm Shabda-ing. Shabda-ing at the moment, but it keeps changing. It keeps changing. Yes, there's something. What's so paradoxical in this spiritual life, which is deconstruction, it's deconstructing a notion of an adapted self, a small self. But in order to deconstruct that notion, you need stability. You can't start giving someone deconstruction practice when they're out of balance. So again, these are all plays of words. So stability, it really means balance. It doesn't mean fixed, because we know if someone's fixed, they're not doing very good. They need to be fluid. But in order to deconstruct, which is what our job is, to deconstruct our false notions, we need stability or balance. Yeah. Yes. Right. And why would I have faith or trust? Because I can feel something good on the horizon. Yeah, okay. I'm used to having my nice white shirt, but I know, I feel it. Even if I could let it go, it's going to be okay. And something better is waiting for me. You know, or as Rumi says, when was I less by dying? You know, I died as a rock and I became a plant. I died as a plant, I became an animal. I died as an animal, I became human. Why should I fear death? When was I less by dying? So because each of us is in the flow of a unique part of the all-pervading reality, each of our religions is going to be unique. So I like the organizing principle that there's as many religions as there are sentient beings. And what do I mean by religion? Our vehicle to freedom. I don't mean freedom is a religion. Religion should be that which helps lead you to God, or whatever word placeholder for God you want to go, because all of us have some habitual pattern when we say God to think of something outside of ourself in some other form, in some other realm, much better off than we are. You know, so we're going to have to slowly transform our notion of the beloved, or whatever that is, of ourself. So as we go on this afternoon, we want to start looking at method, you know, our vehicle. How do we drive the car? What kind of car are we going to use? And how do we drive it? What's the best way to get good mileage out of it and go a long distance with our pedagogy, our love, serve, remember. So we've got 3-4 minutes. I'll tell you a story that all the great Sufis have told, and Hazrat Inayat Khan has a beautiful telling of it. Maybe I can tell by myself, but I like reading his words, so you have to listen to him. Oh, is that all right? Sometimes I think it's better to put it in my own words. Sometimes
like reading his words. Here we go. There is a story which explains this subject very well. Freedom, he's talking about freedom. It is of a king who had a parrot, which he loved so much that he kept it in a golden cage and always attended to it himself. The king and queen both paid such a great attention to the parrot that everyone in the palace was jealous of it. Okay, just we want a head start since we're going to listen, you know, this is a teaching story. Who's the parrot in the story? We are. We're the parrot. What's the golden cage?
Shirt.
Yeah, the shirt, the body. You know, the king and queen feeding us, that's all these, the pleasures of life. And it's paradoxical that the way to the inner life is through beauty, and then at the same time, beauty being the most intoxicating factor. There's another story, and Adkan tells a Sufi story about how manifestation started, that God was lonely, whatever that means. I don't know. God was lonely and so wanted to manifest something, and so manifested a form, and then said to the spirit, I made this form for you, in you go. And the spirit looked at it and said, nothing doing. I'm not going to get in there. You're nuts. You know, no, I made it for you. It's beautiful. No, I'm not getting in that cage. Then God, in all her trickery or wisdom, knew that the nature of the spirit was the love of beauty. And so invited a choir of angels, and the angels began to sing. The soul became intoxicated, slipped right in, and here we are. Yeah, and all of these are bad metaphors because we don't want to get out. But getting out's somehow a bad metaphor. I agree with you. Yeah, but we don't want to get away. That's the whole. We want to switch our version. We want to get here. Here's where it is. It's here. It's here. It's here. It's not over there. But yes, I'm with you. Okay. One day the king was about to go into the forest where the parrot came from. What does the forest represent? And he said to the parrot, my pet, I have loved you and kept you with all the care and attention and fondness that I could, and I should very much like to take any message you wish to your sisters and your brothers in the forest. Parrot said, O king, how kind you've offered to do this for me. Please convey to my sisters and my brothers in the jungle that the king and the queen have done their very, very best to make me happy. A golden cage, all kinds of fruits, all nice things of all sorts, and they love me so much. However, in spite of all this attention that they give me, I long for the forest and the desire to dwell among you, free. And that freedom always possesses my heart and mind. But I see no way out. So pray, send me your goodwill and your love. One only lives in hope. Perhaps someday my wish shall be granted. The king went into the forest and approached the tree from which the parrot was taken and said to the sisters and brothers of the parrots, O parrots, there is one whom I have taken from among you to my palace, and I'm so fond of him, and he receives all the attention I can give, and this is your brother's message. They listened attentively, and one after another, they dropped to the ground and seemed dead. The king was depressed beyond measure, spellbound. He couldn't understand what it was that he'd said to the
to the parents that should have affected the feelings so much. The loving parents could not bear the message he gave, and he thought, what a sin I've committed to have destroyed so many lives. And he returned to his palace, and he went to his parrot and said, parrot, how foolish of you to give me such a message that as soon as your sisters and your brothers heard it, one after another, they dropped down and all lay dead before me. The parrot listened to this and looked up gently to the sky. And he fell down too. Now the king was even more sad. How foolish I was. First I gave his message to them and killed them, and now I give their message to him and I kill him also. It was so bewildering. What was the meaning of it all? He commanded his servants to put his dead parrot on a golden tray and bury him with all ceremony. The servants took him out of the cage with great respect. They loosened the chain from his feet. And then, as they were laying him out, the parrot suddenly flew away and sat on the roof. O king, the king said, O parrot, you betrayed me. The parrot said, O king, this is the aim of my soul. It is the aim of all souls. My sisters and brothers in the jungle, they weren't dead. I asked them to show me the way to freedom, and they showed me. I did as they told me, and now I'm free. There is a surah in the Quran which says, Mutu kabla anta mutu, which means die before death. O parrot, you betrayed me. O king, this is the aim of my soul and the aim of all souls. So I hope that gives you a vector for the universal purpose of all beings in all times, in all realms. You know, the roadmap on every cell, it's there. That thirst is on every cell for freedom. And that now we have to look at, okay, we know the destination. How do we make the journey? What do we need with us? You know, what kind of nourishment and vitality and strength and so on? How do we make the journey? So that's our next, this afternoon. We'll figure it out. Okay, let's dedicate. May all beings be well. May all beings be happy. Amen. 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 Beautiful.